Hashtag no music, no intro. This is one of our biggest episodes of the draft season. Friend to the podcast, the first podcast guest that Ryan and I had on the Saints Block Party podcast. Back then, it was the Saints Twitter podcast back in April of 2020. So we have been around for a while. We feel without kind of you coming on and just talking to us that first episode, Tony, we definitely wouldn't be where we are. But please welcome guest of the pod, friend to the pod, Tony Pauline of Sports Kita. Thank you so much for joining us, Tony, as always, every year as we kind of get into the NFL draft as it's draft season.
My pleasure. It's great to be back with you guys. Thanks for the invitation. You know, it's funny. You said the first year was 2020, April 2020. We were in the middle of a pandemic there. We were all locked down. Yeah. Here it is, 2025. I'm in New York. We had an earthquake on Friday, and I'm looking out my window waiting for the eclipse.
The eclipse.
Who knows?
Are you, in the path?
It's a little bit north of me in Buffalo, but we'll be able to see it. I mean, what's going to happen next year when you have me on? We got volcanoes or what?
Who knows?
I did cause an eruption yesterday. I mean, maybe we'll talk about that.
We could start right where that is. You put out something regarding LSU wide receiver, highly respected, talented prospect Malik Nabers, who's expected to go high, maybe probably top 10 in the draft. And you just, you know, essentially what you're standing on is what you report is that, you know, you had heard that he may be a little high maintenance and maybe him going to like a big city or a team in a big city may not be the best for him. And I'm surprised the amount of pushback that's been gotten on that, because like, to me, that's not even a character assassination. But I'm gonna let you speak to all the thing that came from your reporting.
Well, that makes two of us, because actually what happened was it was a full story. And if you read the portion of – if you actually read the story, you know, you should do, and you read the portion on Malik Nabers, 90% of this portion of Malik Nabers, I actually praised him. I talked about how it is absolutely true that some teams have Malik Nabers rated higher than Marvin Harrison Jr. on their draft boards. I said there is some concern because people believe that he's – a bit high maintenance, and that he may struggle in a big city. He'd be better off in a smaller NFL market. And what happened is people just took that one piece and
aggregated
up there, and everything blew up. And I'm assuming few people actually read the story, because if you did, you would have noticed that, you know, the vast majority of it actually praised Malik Nabers. And it's kind of funny because I read a few comments. I tried to stay away from it. Read a few comments. Somebody said I was paid to go out there and kill LSU football. Meanwhile, throughout this entire process, I've said that I believe Jaden Daniels will actually be the best quarterback in this year's class. So, you know, this is the day and age of social media and people taking things out. I did absolutely say that, but it was just a small piece after I had praised Malik Nabers and pointed out the fact that, oh, yes, there were some teams that have Malik Nabers rated higher than Marvin Harrison, but I also pointed out that there are some teams that have Rome Odunze rated higher than Malik Nabers. So take from it what you will.
No, and it makes sense because, I mean, from your perspective, it's not like you're giving your opinion on Malik Nabers. You're just reporting what you always have done is what you're hearing. You go around all these pro days, you're around all the schools, you're around the scouts, you're around the teams. You got to report what you're hearing. So, I mean, it just makes 100% sense that you're going to put that out there. And it's not like you're destroying the guy's character, but, you know, some teams may think this. Yeah.
And just so people know, it wasn't one person that told me this and I ran with it. Actually, somebody brought this up to me before the LSU Pro Day. And then during the LSU Pro Day, somebody in the league said, "What have you heard about this?" And I made some phone calls, and it took basically a week or so, multiple sources, before I went ahead with this, which is always what I do with these situations when there is something negative saying about a player that I don't know personally or I haven't witnessed myself. So, listen, there's no perfect prospect out there. I mean, there's no prospect out there that doesn't have, you know, little nicks and bruises, even Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, as we're seeing. I mean, there's no perfect prospect out there.
There isn't. I think it just goes to the type of I won't say society, but it, especially like with reporting football news or just sports news, it's become such a very aggregating type of culture. Mm-hmm. And almost little to no actually reading of articles, what's the clickbait, what's the hot take, and that getting put out there as like the fact, when it's like literally like so minute in the grand picture and the big picture of what's actually being reported. I love that we started with that and kind of cleared the air with the Malik Nabers situation. Oh, Tony, let's start with the Saints. I started working on my Saints draft article yesterday. I had put that since the 2017 stellar Saints draft class, an all-time draft class, the Saints have subjectively hit on 29% of their draft picks. So they've drafted essentially 10 good players out of 34 total players drafted since 2017. Ryan and I feel like this is such a huge upcoming draft for Mickey Loomis, for the Saints. Everyone's penciling in offensive tackle. The Trevor Penning situation hasn't worked out, even though I think some of that's coaching related. Ryan Ramczyk may need to retire. He may not play again. Everyone's penciling in offensive tackle for the Saints at 14. It makes a lot of sense. We, on this podcast, just feel like that would essentially be getting a sweater at Christmas. And it's just like, oh, here's some socks that'll keep you warm. And what are you, just from what you're hearing, are we expected to get either a sweater or socks for Christmas on draft night?
You could get a sweater or socks. You could be surprised. I mean, to prepare for this podcast, I made some calls yesterday to get the sense of what people are hearing about the Saints, guys I know close to the organization. And they say it's going to be either an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, one of the two right now. Now, draft meetings are going on. So, you know, could receiver play into that? Could a guy like Brian Thomas be added into that mix? Possibly. But I think a couple things of what you mentioned there about how they've missed on so many draft picks. I think part of the problem is they've concentrated so many early selections in one area. You know, they were either looking for pass rushers or so many offensive linemen.
So many.
And when you concentrate so many early picks, so much early draft capital in one area, and it doesn't pan out like it has mm-hmm. in Penning, like the fact that Ramczyk may retire, you really find yourself in a deeper hole than you would have, you know, if you had just continuously taken best player available. I mean, how many years?
Come on, Tony.
How many years have we sat here and we said, well, the Saints got to address the quarterback position and they bypassed Jordan Love or whoever, in favor of an offensive lineman. So what I'm hearing right now is it's going to be on the line of scrimmage, not guaranteed a 100% offensive lineman, could also be defensive lineman as well.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess it makes sense from their standpoint dealing with what they have going on with the offensive line.
Oh, and the Buzz Lightyear mug. All right, Tony. Toy Story, fellow Toy Story fan.
I love it. But I guess me and Adams, our worry is when you have tunnel vision on like one position, whether it's, you know, offensive line, that's when mistakes happen. You know, that's when that's when you miss out on great players, you know, really great players. You know, Bowers at tight end or whether it's a wide receiver or, you know, some of those positions where some people might feel like you could get those in the second round or third round, but you don't want to pass up a great offensive tackle or a great defensive lineman early in the draft. There are some defensive linemen I really love that I would love for them to take, you know, if it's there and if there's an offensive lineman with a similar grade, it's like, how do you go? Where do you go with that? Do you go with the offensive tackle? Because they have needs on both sides. You know what I'm saying? On the defensive line and the offensive line.
I think, you know, it's kind of a conundrum in the sense that what you said at the beginning, I absolutely agree with. This is a draft where the Saints got to get players that are going to be starting week one and producing week one.
Yes.
Because Dennis Allen and Mickey Loomis's jobs are on the line. And you know, what you also say, you're correct there, but you also make sense. And you've got to take best player available within reason, you know, if rather than continually taking players at a position or a unit for need as they have on the offensive line and sometimes, you know, pass rushers. They seem to always eternally be looking for a pass rusher. So I think that, you know, Loomis and Allen are looking at, we got to get guys in the first couple of rounds or first couple of picks that are on the field producing come week one, but that may not be the best long-term strategy.
Right. The pass rushers, just the last couple of years, going back to what, 2018, it's been Marcus Davenport. It's been Peyton Turner. Right. They drafted Isaiah Foskey in the second round last year, who didn't contribute at all. Like, so there have just been some just misses across the board at those positions, kind of that tunnel vision mindset. Our draft bay, our draft crush this year is Brock Bowers. I know you know, the reports out there, I think you were kind of the first person on it kind of saying he's not likely to get past the Jets at 10. Is there any feasible way that potentially Bowers could fall to 14?
I doubt it. You know, what I said was he's not going to get past Denver at 12. If Denver doesn't make a move up for a quarterback, the Jets really like him a lot and could take him at 10. And that's turned out to be true. I think what happens is once you get down to that area where does Denver trade up for a quarterback? Who was in that 12th spot? Are they looking at Bowers? You know, would they be willing to move down for a team that wants Bowers? Bowers is going to be working out Wednesday, the 10th. We're taping this on Monday, the 8th. Excuse me. He's going to be running routes on Wednesday, the 10th. It'll be interesting to see who's there because teams are in the middle of draft meetings. So for a team to send the tight ends coach, maybe a general manager or a director of scouting to watch Brock Bowers run routes, that's pretty significant and pull them out of draft meetings. That's going to be pretty significant. Bowers is a tremendous playmaking tight end, and I can understand why, you know, he's your draft crush. I mean, you look at the Kansas City Chiefs and you look at the New England Patriots, the two dynasties that we've had since 2000. Yeah, they had great quarterbacks, but they also had dominant playmaking tight ends. And that's what Bowers is, which is why I don't think he's going to fall as far as the New Orleans Saints.
And we saw it, you know, not as long as Travis Kelce, not as long as Rob Gronkowski, but like Jimmy Graham was for a time just right up there. So we've seen it too as fans. We've seen what an elite playmaking tight end can just open up the offense.
Absolutely, and that's what he is. And he's not a bad blocker. I mean, when you look at Bowers, you know, they didn't ask him to do too much inline blocking. When he did a solid job. He was very effective blocking in motion on the second level. You know, I'm told he's going to be about 242 pounds. I'm told, you know, when he was healthy and he was running a 40 times in the 4.5s. I don't know that he's going to run on Wednesday. The problem with him running is, you know, you want to get a time in. But if he runs and he re-injures that hamstring, he may not be ready for rookie minicamp. So it's sort of a balancing. They got to kind of balance it out, he and his agent, as to what he's going to do. I know that he really wants to work out. He's chomping at the bit to get out there and do some testing. But you got to be careful, especially this late in the juncture.
Yeah. One thing you recently wrote about that I thought was interesting in regards to Harrison is how him choosing not to do any of the off-season stuff, any of the workout stuff, how that might have cost him maybe just a little bit in the competition between him and Malik Nabers and Rome. That's fascinating to me because that was kind of on my radar earlier. It's like, you know, I know he was outstanding as a college prospect. And look, just go watch the tape. That should be enough. But at the same time, when you got guys like Malik Nabers, they're out there working. And they're out there running and showing the 40 time. It does make you wonder, like, damn, should he have participated a little more?
Yeah, not just the 40 time, but he had a vertical jump, I believe it was like 40-plus inches. He ran routes and everything. And, you know, I understand you've got to base it primarily on the film. But when you are going to be projected as a very early pick and you have people that are going to invest tens of millions of dollars into you, and you're saying, I'm not going to do these things. I'm not going to do anything that people before me have done in my position. That's not going to leave a good taste in people's mouths. I mean, there were some people, Bryce Young, you know, they wouldn't do testing, but they threw. You know, they threw the football, mm-hmm. and it go. You've had that through the history of the pre-draft process. I think for Harrison, just to say, hey, listen, just base it on the film, and he wasn't as productive last year as a lot of people expected. A lot of that had to do with the quarterback play at Ohio State, Colin McCord, who was just not a good quarterback. He's no longer with the program. But I think it leaves, as I said in the article, which I praised Malik Nabers, and I also said that he's a bit of a high-maintenance guy. I said when Marvin Harrison is doing nothing, he leaves the door open, and Malik Nabers, with his testing, with his showing on LSU Pro Day, has kind of stepped into that opening, which is why some teams grade Malik Nabers higher than they grade Marvin Harrison.
It makes a lot of sense. It does across the board. I'm just fascinated to see where all three of these wide receivers go. I think they're all great. They win in different ways, and just follow their careers is going to be really fun. Getting back to the defensive line, Ryan and I have watched quite a few edge rushers, kind of knowing and thinking that the Saints wouldn't need to probably invest in one at some point in the draft, even round one. There's one prospect that we watched that is people like his tape, and he just tested athletically. People are high on that. Me and him just really can't stand that we don't want them to draft, and that's Jarrett Verse. And conversely, there's another prospect who we love, but there's injury concerns with Latu, pass rusher out of UCLA. Just give your thoughts on those two prospects who are probably going to be options for the Saints at 14 if they're available.
Yeah, I do like Verse, and I kind of came into the season, into my film work, with a bit of a negative attitude on him. It's like, well, here's a small school guy, he's just an edge rusher. But when I watched the film, I saw a guy who was not only a good pass rusher, but he played within the system, and he was instinctive, and he would set the edge to allow his teammates to make plays on the ball handler, and he dropped back off the line and play in space when necessary. He also gave effort against the run. So I did not have a high opinion of Verse coming into the season, coming into my film work. But when I really watched him and saw him develop and improve upon, where he was in 2022 when he seemed to be the flavor of the day, I thought he deserved a lot of credit for that. And then he goes to the combine and he tests faster, tests better than people expected. People were looking at him like a 5'7", 5'7", 5'5" type of player. He runs in the high 4.5s, so he's a good 10th to 1/1500th of a second better. So I do like him a lot. Latu, it's a question of medicals. I was told yesterday that for the most part, Latu has gotten medical clearance from most teams. He hasn't failed. He hasn't been flagged from a majority of teams. Now, you go back, Latu was basically had to leave Washington because Washington was going to medically retire him over injuries. He goes to UCLA. He plays lights out. I mean, he was a dominant pass rusher. But also, like Verse, I mean, he's more than just an up-the-field guy. He shows a good change of direction, the ability to get out into space. He didn't test as well as Jarrett Verse, but that's fine because, I mean, it was only like 5/100th of a second difference. He's tall. He's got the ability to put on weight, to add some bulk to his frame, which is only going to improve his game. I think Latu is a great story. But with Latu, it's going to come down, and I don't have any information on this, on how highly he is rated by the Saints and what has the medical staff passed on, to Mickey Loomis and the coaching staff about the medical situation. Are they going to give him medical clearance?
I mean, I will say the little, I guess, ray of sunshine is that they're the only team that cleared Chase Young with his neck issue as a free agent. So it's like, let's just get all the guys that maybe have neck issues as long as they're productive and see if it works out for us.
And what they're really looking at with a guy like Latu is, will he make it to his second contract? Is he going to be healthy for that second contract? And, never mind, is he going to be able to play a 17-game schedule? That's vitally important. So if he gets those gets those checks and, they have him highly rated, you got to assume he would be in the conversation with that selection.
Right. And, we've looked at a ton of edge prospects. Adam's been doing this thing. We kind of figured out how we could kind of reverse engineer the Saints' athletic profile, just looking at players that they've drafted over the years, as to kind of figure out a prototype that they like to look for. And one guy that propped up when Adam was doing the analysis was Missouri edge rusher. What's his name?
Darius Robinson.
He was completely off my radar, and then I just started looking at him. What's the story behind him? Is he like a late round? Is he a mid round guy? What's the story with that guy?
He's probably going to go late first round. I think people mischaracterize Darius Robinson as an edge rusher. He is more of a complete defensive lineman. I don't think he's as good a pass rusher as some of the top pass rushers in this class, but he's a much better run defender. He goes 6'5 and change, 286 pounds. He can play end in a four-man line. He could play be used in a three-man line as a two-gap end. He's only going to get better as he physically matures and gets bigger. He's a good football player. He didn't test all that well, but he's a real good football player. He looks very athletic on film, on the field, rushing the passer, changing direction, getting down the line of scrimmage. And he's got, you know, a Mr. Universe type body with growth potential. So I think there's a chance he goes late first round, maybe the Baltimore Ravens if they're looking for a defensive lineman. If he's not if he's not a first round pick, I think he'll be off the board within the first 5 to 8 selections of round 2.
It's just I just watched this tape when kind of going over the project that we do, and I had no idea about him, and I just watched. I was like, oh, he's like incredibly impressive, like just he impressed me more in the limited what I saw than I kind of saw from Burr. So I'm just very intrigued by him. The Saints, as much as they didn't hit on haven't hit on picks last year, they did seem to hit on at least one player that we know of, and Brian Breesy, who you can just tell that he's going to be a good football player, and potentially as well as hit on A.T. Perry and Jordan Howden. What Byron Murphy II from Texas is super intriguing to me, and it wouldn't surprise me if maybe they kind of double down and kind of going DTs and, you know, back-to-back years in the first round to kind of just improve on that. I know that he was getting a lot of buzz for the Vikings, that, and that kind of came out of the combine. Where is he in this process?
Yeah, actually, I had broken that story from the Shrine Bowl almost a month earlier.
Yeah.
That the Vikings really liked him. The Vikings then made the move up to get that second first round pick, and they're probably going to make another move because they now need a quarterback with Kirk Cousins taking off for Atlanta. I mean, Murphy would be a perfect fit for the Saints defensive line with that four man line. He is an explosive and incredibly athletic one-gap defensive tackle who shows terrific strength at the point of attack. I mentioned Darius Robinson looking like he's Mr. Universe. Well, if you were at the combine and you saw Byron Murphy speaking at the podium, I mean, this guy is jacked. This guy looked like after he was done speaking, he was going to, you know, do some poses for people to impress them even more. And he plays that way too. He's strong. He's incredibly athletic. He's explosive. He's a guy who plays with great leverage. I also think he's someone who's just hitting his stride. You know, he was decent in 2023. He was really good in 2022. He was really good in 2023. I think his best football is ahead of him. Now, I mean, I haven't heard the Saints. I've heard potentially Seattle at 16. I've heard the Rams at 19. So, I mean, if the Saints do like him, I think they're going to have an opportunity to draft him. This is assuming that Minnesota doesn't make a move and is locked out of a quarterback, because if they're locked out of a quarterback or they can't trade up to get one of the signal callers, I do think that the Vikings would revert back to the Byron Murphy plan with the 11th pick.
Do you have like a clear picture on who's the number one defensive player in this draft? Is it Dallas Turner? Is he the number one?
On my board, yes. And that's what I hear all along. I hear the Atlanta Falcons like Dallas Turner. He's very likely the first. He will be their pick at 8. He will be the only top 10 defensive player selected in the draft.
That is wild, Tony. That's a wild thing.
It is, especially compared to recent years, where the top of the draft has been all defense. Now it's all offense. I'll get back to that in a second. But, I mean, Dallas Turner, they need an edge rusher. And I think Dallas Turner, like sort of like Jared Verse, even Darius Robinson gets mischaracterized because he's more than just an edge rusher. I mean, anybody who's watched Alabama football the past 3 years understands that 3 years ago, this guy played more of a pure linebacker position. And you could tell right then and there, he was a star in the making. And they basically pulled him from using him in space to putting him up at the line of scrimmage. And he was also outstanding in that aspect. So I think hands down the top defensive player is Dallas Turner. I think he's going to be the only defensive player that has a chance to be a top 10 pick. And the reason is you know, you're going to have as many as four quarterbacks taken in the top 10. We talked about three receivers who are going to be taken in the top 10. You know, you've got two offensive tackles that are probably going to be taken in the top 10. You have a tight end who could be a top 10 pick. You've got more offensive players in the top 10 than you actually have draft selections. And when you look at the needs of the teams, especially the teams that need quarterbacks or receivers, that's going to push the defensive players down a bit. Plus, you know, there's no marquee Trayvon Walker or Aiden Hutchinson type player in this year's draft.
Just a fascinating thing. I wanted to hit on the JJ McCarthy thing. It's such a, I listened to your little episode or the clip you talked with Tom Corrin of the Patriots, and just, I think you worded it perfectly when you said you understood why he may get drafted high, even though you like don't like, that's how me, Ryan, and I see him too. Where is JJ McCarthy going to end up being drafted? Because to me, it's like his draft selection and Penix's draft selection are the two biggest, most fascinating things I'm wanting to see where they go.
I mean, McCarthy could go three, like I mentioned, to the Patriots. He could go four if he gets past the Patriots, or if the Patriots trade down. He's going to be a top 10 pick. He's going to be a top, it could be a top 8 pick. He could be a top 4 pick. And I agree with you. I mean, it's a combination of, number one, the guy did a lot of winning at Michigan. You can't take that away from him. And the fact is, like a lot of Michigan players, his interviews have been phenomenal. I mean, you watch J.J. McCarthy on film. Yeah, he's only throwing the ball 14, 15, 16 times a game, but he shows great moxie. He shows great confidence. You know, he's a great leader, and that has projected well over into these interviews. And that's what teams want at the quarterback position. And although I'm not a huge fan of J.J. McCarthy being a top 15 pick, never mind being a top 10 pick, you know, football coaches do exactly that. They coach football players. And then when they see a J.J. McCarthy, 6'2", 219 pounds, they see his movement skills. They see the way he's lead the offense. They're like, we're going to coach him. We're going to coach the best out of him. And we're going to teach him to go from throwing the ball 16 times a game to throwing the ball 30 times a game. So there's a lot of risk in that, as we've seen time and time again at the quarterback position, the Zach Wilsons of the world, the Sam Darnolds of the world. I'm here in New York, the Daniel Jones of the world. A lot of times it doesn't pan out, but there is such a need at the quarterback position. And I think in years past with that rookie salary cap, you know, it makes them more tolerable. They are more tolerable within organizations as opposed to, say, you know, fans, like, you know, you talk about all the busts that the Saints have had, you know, the organization's like, well, you know, we can replace these guys in future years because football's such a here and now game. But I we'll see. I just think that J.J. McCarthy is going to be the epitome of a quarterback, excuse me, that is going to be overdrafted because of the team's needs at the quarterback position.
Right. And that's the thing about him. It's like, I like J.J. McCarthy. It's just, it's such a projection that you have to do, especially when you talk about the top 10. It's just so, because he's so polarizing, and everybody I see talk about him has to add that little caveat. It's like, hey, I wouldn't do it, but seems like teams are going to do it. So right? It's just, everybody. It's strange. It's so strange to me. I'm so fascinated to see what actually happens on draft night. Another player we mentioned was Michael Penix. Player I love. I would love for the Saints to draft him.
Please,
just the arm talent and all that stuff. I think he's gonna be a solid pro. But you know, I've seen him mock everything to the second rounds, mid first. I mean, where is this guy gonna go?
I think if there's a fifth quarterback in round one, he could be that guy. Maybe a team trades in the bottom of round one. I mean, Penix, good and bad with Penix when you watch the film. I mean, the good is you talk about the arm. He's a tremendous vertical passer. He makes some incredible throws down the field. Used his weapons well. But there's a lot of inconsistency there. There's a lot of streakiness there. You don't know what you're getting from Michael Penix from one series of downs to another, sometimes one quarter of that, one quarter to another. You just don't know because there's a lot of streakiness there, which is a dangerous thing at the quarterback position. Plus, there's the age. Plus, there's the, you know, the past injuries. And right. When a guy's 24 years old, they're looking at he doesn't have the same ceiling as a guy like J.J. McCarthy, who's 3 years younger and doesn't have all the injuries. So, you know, you got to put that all together. I think Penix has had two outstanding years at Washington. He deserves a lot of credit. I don't think he's going to he will go later than the mid part of round two. If he does, it's because there's been red flags there because of the age and the injuries combined.
Yeah. So I feel like we got the hint that maybe we could get like some socks and a sweater at Christmas, and then like we just completely didn't talk about any of what the socks and sweaters may be. We've seen, and Ryan and I, we applaud people like you who watch offensive line film and tape. It's just we like the flash, we like edge rushers, right receivers, but like O-line, like we can't do it. We've seen players like the offensive tackle from Penn State, Olu, get mocked to the Saints. We've seen Fuaga from Oregon State get mocked to the Saints. JC Latham from Alabama. What are we, you don't have, not too long, but like, who are those players in a nutshell, and kind of what would they bring to any team that were to draft them?
I think Fashanu is really being underrated at this point in time. You know, the guy was talked about as a top five pick, and now all of a sudden he's fallen off. He had three outstanding years at Penn State. He is a premier pass protector. His hands are a little bit small, 8.5 inches. I don't know how important that is, but there really hasn't right. been a top offensive tackle drafted that has had hands under 9 inches the past 20 years or so. But you watch his mobility, you watch his footwork off the edge, you watch his movement skills, and I'm a left tackle guy. I like those Jonathan Ogden types of players, and Fashanu fits that sort of mold if hand size isn't important to you. Fuaga is, you know, he's more of a right tackle, where Fashanu's your left tackle, Fuaga's your right tackle. Some people, some teams have Fuaga in a guard on their draft boards. He's big. He's powerful. He moves relatively well. He's decent, not great in pass protection, where Fashanu is just outstanding in pass protection.
Interesting.
And he's a guy who's got a good amount of upside. J.C. Latham is interesting, and interesting in the sense that he's a big, massive right tackle who blocks with terrific fundamentals. He bends his knees, stays square, very good with his arms. Solid in pass protection, his ability to slide out. A dominant run blocker, but, you know, is 342 pounds. Is that his playing weight? Because I was told he was closer to 360 pounds at Alabama. And, you know, how big is too big? I mean, you've seen guys, Evan Neal, you've seen some of the bigger offensive tackles who've come out of Alabama have not fared all that well. And, you know, it's going to be, in my opinion, it's going to be tough for a guy that's over 340 pounds to block some of the quick edge rushers on Sunday. He's the guy who I think has got to get his weight down. It's got to keep it down. In New York, you saw what happened with Mekhi Becton here when he ballooned up. So with Latham, terrific right tackle, you know, but is he too big? I think, you know, what are they going to, is Penning going to stay at left tackle? Are they going to try and move Penning to right tackle? If they move Penning to right tackle, then you need a left tackle. Is Fashanu there for them? I don't know that he's going to be there because I think he's being underrated. If Fashanu isn't there, do they take a flyer on a guy like Fatanu of Washington, who was, you know, you talked about Michael Penix. He did a great job protecting Michael Penix last year. He's a mobile, athletic, left tackle prospect. Some teams view him as at guard. fundamentally sound, great footwork off the edge, great lateral range. He is more of your Fashano, Jonathan Ogden, if you will, left tackle type compared to the Lathams, compared to Fuegas, compared to Amarius Mims, who I think are strictly right tackles.
That's super fascinating. And I think, you know, I think that's just going to be one of the picks, you know, for the Saints. It just it makes too much sense from their perspective. I don't want to dive too deep into offensive guards. I haven't watched any. But where is the run of those offensive guards, do you think? Is that more of a second-round thing or day three? Where are those guys could typically go?
I think the run on the offensive guard starts when the run on the offensive tackle stops. And what I mean by that is you could have 78 offensive tackles taken in round one before your first offensive guard is selected. You could have two center guard players in Jackson Powers Johnson of Oregon and Graham Barton of Duke selected in round one. Jackson Powers Johnson of Oregon, who was a terrific guard in 2022, moved to center this year, was outstanding as a center. Graham Barton of Duke, who played left tackle for Duke, he's projected to guard or center, probably first-round pick. You're looking at somewhere probably in the beginning, middle portion of round two, Christian Haynes of UConn, who was a dominant run blocker, just a destroyer, had a great Senior Bowl week, had tested much better than people expected at the combine. Cooper Beebe of Kansas State, a lot of people like him, just a masher as a run blocker, second-round pick. He's only got 31-inch arms, which is a concern for some people. Isaiah Adams of Illinois, again, late second, early third-round pick. Played a lot of tackle at Illinois out of need, but he's a natural guard. Had three terrific days of practice at the Senior Bowl, just destroying people at offensive guard.
The need at guard for the Saints is an underrated thing. Ruiz has been fine, like average at, but like James Hurst at left guard. And you asked the question on Penning. We don't need, like, maybe they try to move Penning to guard. We have no clue. Like we wish we could have more insight on what is going on with Trevor Penning, why he's in Dennis Allen's doghouse. Maybe some of it's just play related, but it feels a little pettier and deeper than just play. So it's just one of those things that we just don't have an answer to.
I mean, and the pettiness would make sense, because if you remember when Penning was at the Senior Bowl, he was getting into fights every snap, and you know, he had to prove that he was a big man from a small school. So I don't have any information of this. I'm just building upon what you said. The pettiness could be just a personality conflict. I think, you know, they'll be able to get a good guard potentially in day three. I'm looking at my board here. Javion Cohen of Miami of Florida. Bo Limmer of Arkansas is a guy to keep an eye on. You know, you're talking fourth, fifth round there. Dominic Puni, who a lot of people like, have him rated much earlier than I do, somewhere early in the part of day three. So they'll be able to get a good guard if they want to in day three. I don't think they have to use any early draft capital on the position.
So we're doing this a live stream. We're not going to take up too much of your time. Some of our most dedicated listeners have a few draft questions. Just kind of go rapid fire here. What team will surprise us? And this is from Mark. What team will surprise us the most in terms of how they move this draft?
You got to look at number three with the Patriots. I mean, they're sitting there at three. Quarterback is the default position. You know, for the most part, they have a brand new head coach. They got a brand new general manager or de facto general manager in Elliott Wolf. Do they sit there and take a quarterback? Is that quarterback Drake May? Is that quarterback J.J. McCarthy? Or do they trade down? So I think the first two picks are going to be pretty much locked in with Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. I think that's the way it's going to go. I think that's the way it should go. So really early on with New England, that is something that can set the tone, because do they trade down? How far do they trade down? It's going to be a quarterback at three. We just don't know what team's going to be selecting that quarterback at three.
Interesting. Dante says, when do you think the first running back will come off the board, and how do you view that position in this year's draft?
Yeah, there's no dominant player at the position this year's draft. I think it's going to be late in round two. when the first running back comes off the board. I think it's going to be Trey Benson of Florida State. I think there is a good amount of third and fourth round running backs that are situational ball carriers at the next level. Trey Benson of Florida State, Blake Corum of Michigan, Jonathan Brooks of Texas, who's a terrific running back coming off a knee injury. You know, he could be great value. Marshawn Lloyd of USC, Jalen Wright of Tennessee, who a lot of teams really like because he's so explosive. Will Shipley of Clemson. I think you're looking at late second, early third round for those guys who I think are going to be real good rotational backs at the next level. You know, it's right. not like they're going to be top 10 backs and asked to be feature ball carriers. They're going to be asked to be pass catchers out of the backfield, coming on third down, get them the ball in space. I think all those guys will do really good in that sort of role at the next level.
Last one we have from me is, you mentioned potentially Brian Thomas Jr. at 14 for the Saints, maybe being an option. Ryan, like, I think it's that would be a pick where we would be happy about it, even though we probably don't love him as much as a players as I, you know, most seem to do. We have some concerns with his kind of inconsistencies and his, you know, his drops and kind of concentration things, but he tested great. Just if you could, just what are your thoughts on Brian Thomas Jr. As a player?
Yeah, I absolutely love Thomas. I mean, I think he's a guy who is just starting to hit a stride. I think his best football is ahead of him. You mentioned the testing. I mean, no one expected him to run 4.33 at 209 pounds. He looked like a fluid, smooth receiver at LSU with a big body who could win out for the contested throw. And then he goes and runs a 4.33. So you know he's got the speed. You just have to coach him to play to that speed. I think the sky is the limit for this guy. LSU people who think that I hate the program, you know, listen to what I'm saying. And I think if, you know, he's probably going to be underdrafted in the sense that he's probably a mid first round talent who's going to go in the second half of round two. But I think if he's coached correctly, he's got enormous amount of ability and he could develop into a real good number one receiver at the next level. No doubt in my mind. It's a bit of a jump to get there, but he's got that talent.
And a last one for me, we didn't touch much on wide receivers. The second round seems like there's a ton of wide receivers in the second round that the Saints could possibly get. I love Leggett is one of my favorites, but there are so many. Wow. Any guys that you have a big eye on in the second round?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of them. I mean, how far does Devontae Walker of North Carolina, where does he fall into? He's probably going to go top 15 around two. Roman Wilson of Michigan is a guy that a lot of players, a lot of teams like. Great route runner, terrific pass catcher, tough receiver, can also double as a return specialist. A lot of teams like Ricky Pearsall of Florida. We're talking about guys who tested much better than he expected. He's a great route runner. He's got incredible hands. And then he goes and he runs in the low 4.4s, high 4.3s at the combine faster than anybody expected. I like both kids out of Washington, Jalen McMillan and Jalen Polk. Everybody talks about Roma Dunze, as well they should. But, I mean, McMillan was the guy there who was able to separate and catch everything. He's quicker than a Dunze. Doesn't have the size, not the game controller. But he's a very complete receiver. And then if you're looking for the bigger guy, you know, you got Keon Coleman out of Florida State, who I think has fallen a bit, ran 4.6 at the combine, has not done shuttles, is not going to run shuttles before the draft, which, you know, he's more of your contested catch receiver, which devalues him as far as the draft is concerned, but you still need that type of guy. You know, you mentioned Xavier Leggett. Leggett is sort of a poor man's Brian Thomas in the sense that he's super fast. He catches the ball well, but he's got to complete his game. He's got a great amount of upside. He's got to do more than just run fast in a straight line. He's got to show that he can, you know, turn left or right and keep his momentum and keep his balance and be able to catch the ball. That's just a matter of coaching.
Absolutely. Last one from our community, and we'll let you get out of here, Tony. Our friend, our dude, Demon Tom Slam says, who's a player who's going to be drafted earlier than everyone expects them to go? Which I think that's a great question to end this one on, because it's fascinating.
I mentioned Troy Fatanu of Washington. Mm-hmm. The offensive lineman. I think there's a good chance that he is selected earlier than people think because of the fact that he can play left tackle. He can play guard. Some people think he can play right tackle. I think he's going to go a little bit earlier. If it was up to me, I would take Chop Robinson. I love Chop Robinson at Penn State. I've loved him for 2 years. He's explosive. Had that concussion issue late in the year after that Ohio State game last year. But, I mean, you know, we talked about Jared Verse. We talked about Dallas Turner. You know, if I have a draft crush, as they say, it would be Chop Robinson. He's probably not going to go into the bottom third of round one, but I think he's going to be a great player.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Tony, all the information and clearing the air regarding Malik Nabers. It's always a pleasure and honor when you come on, and it just kind of shows how far we've kind of come in these 4 years and what, again, we wouldn't be here without you taking the time and having that first episode with us 4 years ago. So thank you so much, Tony. We really appreciate it. And thank you for your time.
My pleasure, fellas. We'll see you next year.
See you, right. Have a good one.
Take care.
Thank you all for joining us this amazing draft special. We will have the episode up and posted soon if you didn't catch it live. With that, we're out.
Peace.